February 15th, 2008.
Hey, my name is Johan Falk and I'm calling from Sweden. You're listening to the Lullabot Drupal podcast.
Episode 54 of the Lullabot podcast. We get together almost every week and talk about Drupal. And we're going to do it again for the 54th time.
Can't stop us.
Can't stop the Drupal. You certainly can't stop the Drupal because we just got a new version of Drupal, right? Version 6 just came out this week. It's exciting. But we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch of other things in this podcast. First of all, I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byron.
And also...
Addison Berry.
And...
James Walker.
Yes. Team Lullabot. Rockin' the rock. Walking the walk. And also talking about Drupal.
Totally missed a chance to say talk the talk.
He was leaving it to hang people out.
Yeah,
and then just whip the carpet out from under
exactly.
Him.
Oh man,
That's how I roll. I roll like that.
He's always keeping you guessing. That's Jeff.
Yeah. First, let's just do our little Lullabot advertisement. We, as usual, have Lullabot training workshops coming up next month. In Australia. James Walker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're taking the month of March off because we will all be at DrupalCon, attending, presenting, and generally soaking up all the Drupal goodness. But we'll be back with workshops. Potentially based on, depending on where you are, they may or may not be coming to a city near you. Because for the first time ever, we're not going to host a workshop in North America, but rather we're going down under, as they say. We'll be in Melbourne, Australia, April 7th to 11th, and we'll be doing a split week covering both module development and kind of the Drupal APIs, as well as some theming topics. So it should be pretty exciting. Lullabot.com/training. Get in and register early. We'll see you in Australia.
Yeah, if you're in Melbourne, if you know someone in Melbourne, if you're in Australia, Asia, you know, we want to see all of these people because we're going a really long way to get there, and we hope that people will come on down.
Totally. We're gonna host a contest to see who comes the furthest to attend the workshop.
You're saying that just because you figure that you will be the person who will win.
I just want a prize.
Hey, dude, I'm way further east than you.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, we may need to do Google Maps to figure out exactly how that works.
Yeah, it could be a tight race.
Because is it east for east or west? You can kind of go either way to get there.
Yeah,
somehow I don't think Google Maps is going to be able to plot driving directions to Australia.
You'd be surprised. Canada. They do like, they say, you know, if you do like from New York to London, they're like, you know, go to the thing and then it says start swimming. It actually does.
I think they closed that Easter egg because I tried to show somebody that joke the other day and it didn't work.
Probably so. They were afraid of getting sued.
Well, you know, and there's just distance as the crow flies, but then there's actually dealing with traveling and having to fly to some completely out of the way place so that you can get your transfer to a sort of in the way place to get on the rest of the way to actually get where you're going. So.
Oh, well, now you're just bumming me out. We don't want to talk about real travel.
You know, people actually show their travel plans and see who took the longest from beginning to end.
Who had the biggest hassles? Angie will always win that because Angie always has the biggest travel hassles.
Yeah, we'll see.
Oh, dude, should we talk about our travel excitement in LA?
Well, so this is the thing. Yeah. We're just getting off a week of workshops. Last week, we had workshops in Los Angeles. Great time, great location, great Wi-Fi. We don't take that for granted.
Yeah.
Sunny days. We had an ocean view. It was awesome. Good time.
Yeah. I would say the only thing I would add was a great group of attendees as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
for any of them that are listening, thanks for being a really kick-ass group. Can I say kick-ass on the air?
Yes, you can.
All right. Yeah. You guys kicked ass. And yeah, we had a lot of fun. Got to spend each day looking out over the ocean, listening to the barking of seals.
Oh, yeah. Seals.
Yeah.
It was all cool except for the fire.
Well,
oh, the fire. Yeah.
That's exciting.
I forgot about that. Yeah, there was a fire in our hotel too. That was exciting.
Guaranteed exciting time, you know, with the Lullabot workshops.
Lullabot so hot.
I'm so good.
Burn.
So good. Yeah. So good. It's hot.
Set the place on fire.
Hot fire. Those workshops were on fire. So Drupal 6 is out. What's up with that?
In other news.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
just came out on Wednesday.
They're in the middle of a big marketing push as we're giving this podcast to try and get the word out. I think they've translated the press release into, I don't know, 437 different languages. Not
wow.
that many, but many.
Really?
It was, to show off the internationalization. And, sorry,
yeah, it's somewhere between 11
and
that
6
number.
Million.
And 11.
Yeah, look at that. Oh, wow. Goodness. They've got a post and all the stuff. And look, they've got columns. This is exciting. Drupal is getting very exciting.
Yes, they've got columns and images.
I know. It's little stupid things that we do. Like, you know, Drupal for all this time has just had what I would consider, in my humble opinion, horrible, horrible design. But that's just my opinion. Certainly up for debate. But you know, look, there's columns and images and all this kind of stuff that that we don't take for granted. So that's great. Good job to everyone who was involved with the release and the announcements and generally the marketing stuff. This is exciting.
See, on the topic of traveling, I forgot to mention this, but on Friday I spoke at the Women in Open Source conference and did a little Drupal shindig there. And I just wanted to throw out a shout out to everybody who attended that, as well as everybody who helped man and or woman the yeah, that would be a poor
interesting
choice
of words.
Women in Open Source, yeah. Anyway, but everybody who helped power, there we go.
Staff.
The Drupal booth on the weekend. I've heard nothing but awesome reports about that, in that basically there was like a Red Hat booth across the way that, you know, people weren't really going to see, but they were all crowding around the Drupal table. So you guys did an awesome job, and I'm really sorry I couldn't make it, but I really appreciate that. So, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. It's hot. Hot stuff. Let's see. What other news and announcements do we have? Oh, we just launched fastcompany.com this week. That's also been all over the dig with the two G's and
oh, you were going to say blogosphere, weren't you?
I could say blogosphere. Want to hear
me?
Shut up, guys. Yeah,
we did an interview with Ed Sussman a couple of months ago on the podcast, and that's the Fast Company site that we were talking about, and it's out there, and it's really cool. We're really proud of it and the work that we did on that site, and we encourage people to go check it out. It's very a good example of a site that doesn't feel Drupal-y. Further proof that you can kind of do whatever you want with Drupal. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the other thing to point out about is it's really one of the better kind of social networking sites. You know, a lot of the custom work that went into that site was really around kind of, you know, making higher, you know, giving higher prominence to individual profiles and you know, connections between people, and it's got a lot of really cool kind of networking features, recommending content to, you know, your friends and other people, and yeah, it's a cool site.
Fastcompany.com.
Check it out.
Fastcompany.com. And we're trying to get Ed and maybe James and Jeff Eaton to do a little presentation at DrupalCon, talk about the site and how it was built and stuff
like
that.
Oh, we are we?
Well, yeah, we're trying. We're hoping. So, but that's a good segue into DrupalCon, which is happening March 3rd through the 6th in Boston. You can go to DrupalCon.org to find out about the Drupal conference. That's what DrupalCon. Con is short for conference.
Not con artists. Although some of the people are very interesting. So,
yeah. Yeah, we'll be there doing all kinds of presentations and stuff. Any of you have anything submitted that you're excited about? Sessions? We don't know. They haven't actually been picked
stuff,
yet.
I have stuff submitted now.
Yeah, we won't know the actual schedule until after this podcast is recorded. So.
But one thing that I'm really interested, I'm going to talk about simple test because, you know, that's a big itch for me lately is trying to save human brains from having to do stupid things like, you know, make sure that patches work and don't break something before you actually sit down to try and review them. But another thing I'm really excited about is at the end of the month, a group of us are going to University of Minnesota to do like actual real life usability testing of Drupal. Of the Drupal administration panel, like in a lab, and there's like testers, and there's like a testing plan, and the whole thing. So I'm really, really excited about that. And one of the things we'll be doing at DrupalCon is reporting on the results of that, and should be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. Cool. And if anybody's in the Twin Cities area and wants to meet me, but more importantly, Dries, while we're in the Twin Cities, there's going to be a meetup on. And I think the Monday of that week, so this would be Monday the 25th, I guess. But anyway, if you go to groups.drupal.org/twin-cities, you'll see a post there where you can RSVP and sign up, and it should be a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah, so, this is a good time to release Drupal 6. I think there'll be a lot of talk about that at DrupalCon. And also, just sort of moving forward as these Drupal conferences are, it's a lot of the developers and a lot of the sort of visions for the next Drupal, next version of Drupal start to come together. Drupal 7, the Drupal 7 development branch is now open and people are starting to do some work on that. I guess usually the way that these things work is there's a lot of like patches that kind of build up, because there's a code freeze for a few months before each release. Where there's no new features that can get in, but yet still people come up with these things that they want to do and start coding them. And so then when the new branch opens up, there's all these patches to go through and people start being able to conceivably do that. So that's exciting too, right? I mean, new Drupal development happening and all the stuff that's going to happen for Drupal 7, which I think there's going to be a lot of usability stuff. We tend to sort of flip-flop back and forth, don't we, between sort of kind of – I think that like Drupal 5 had a lot of usability improvements, like the way that the admin section worked was a big improvement. What's that?
New installer.
Yeah, and then a new installer. And then Drupal 6, I think that there was a lot more – Well, Drupal 6, there's kind of all around. I mean, there's all the new drag and drop stuff, but you also have stuff like the new block caching mechanism. But there's with Drupal 7, I think this University of Minnesota stuff that's happening, and I think companies like Acquia coming together are really starting to look at sort of the bigger picture needs of Drupal and generally making it easier to use and sort of more attractive to end users for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the Drupal 7 development cycle actually shakes down. Cause there's a lot of really cool stuff kind of on both sides of the fence being talked about right now. I mean, in addition to all the usability and kind of front end work, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, what will change under the hood, you know, driven a lot by the Go PHP 5 movement. So, you know, what can we take advantage of, you know, in our language PHP as developers kind of behind the scenes? And another interesting thing is that Drupal 7 is now going to support only support MySQL version 5 and higher, which opens up the door again for a lot of kind of database level things that we've kind of been constrained from using by the tools that we depend on. So I think Drupal 6 has a lot of, you know, kind of API and developer level improvements as well as usability ones, and I think there's a good chance that 7 will be kind of more along that trend rather than the flip-flop between, you know, usability and developer stuff. So, but as always, it depends on, you know, who puts in the most effort to what aspects.
So that's the subject of today's podcast. I think we're doing pretty good with these segues today.
Yeah, wow. You'd think that we actually planned this a little bit in advance.
I set that up pretty well, I could say.
So the subject of today's podcast is contributing to Drupal and sort of how the process works and why you would want to contribute to Drupal and get involved in that aspect of things and just all that stuff. I think that there are a lot of people out there that come into Drupal and see it as a separate entity from themselves. They download the software and I just need to build a site and I don't want to, you know, get involved in the politics of it or the, you know, I just want it to work. And that's totally fine. However, we wanted to talk about sort of the advantages of starting to get more involved in the directions that Drupal's moving and, I don't know, just everything from contributing to core stuff, the sort of central stuff that everyone's using to the contrib modules and themes and stuff like that that are out there in a little more free form where people can kind of do their own thing. But I know we've talked with a lot of companies who've put in a lot of time and effort building the modules for their site, and usually they feel like it's not a smart thing to put those modules that they spent all this time and money on out there for free for other people to use. But again, we find that there are usually more advantages to putting that stuff out there than not. And so we're going to talk about the way that all those things work and stuff like that. Who wants to kind of start in with this? What could essentially be a huge topic. So hopefully we'll be able to get through this in a reasonable amount of time. So
I can just start and then people can cut me off because I'll just end up talking forever and ever and ever because this is sort of my primary thing that I'm interested in. But so I guess we could start by framing the whole subject of contributing in terms of like some Drupal philosophies about the community. So for example, the main Drupal philosophy is that the drop is always moving, is what we call it. But basically what it means is that each new release of Drupal, developers have full reign to completely break backwards compatibility if it is what's required to move the code along and keep it cutting edge. But we always, you know, will make sure that user's data is carried forward. And, you know, that's a philosophy that's not always, that's kind of a shock to some people. But it's what's allowed Drupal to be a project for, 8 years now, but still remain really light and fast and, you know, and constantly improving because we're not carrying around that baggage from the decisions we made about the node system 8 years ago and things like that.
So that means that the modules for each version of Drupal will not work on the next version of Drupal, right? Modules
right.
written for – there are a few – exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, modules for Drupal 5 will not work for Drupal 6, and likewise, you know, for each version. This allows Drupal to change fundamentally the way that it works and improve with like you're saying, without carrying along all that baggage of trying to maintain backwards compatibility. However, there is always a way to upgrade your data, so you can upgrade your website without losing any of your content. Always.
Right. Another Drupal philosophy that a lot of people are kind of like, oh, about is Drupal works off the concept of personal battle plans. It doesn't work off the concept of wish lists or roadmaps or things like that. But Dries posted a topic the other day about like sort of the results of this big survey that they'd done to ask what people would like to see as part of Drupal 7. And that is probably the closest thing we've ever had to like a formalized roadmap. In general, it's just, this is me, I want to contribute, these are the kinds of stuff I want to work on, you know. And that kind of stuff can be anything from, you know, I'm going to rewrite the entire content management system from the ground up to use object-oriented programming or whatever crazy thing, to like, you know what, I think the documentation could use improving, so I'm going to work on that. And it's just, it's interesting kind of to shift that mindset around where, you know, you really don't, Drupal doesn't work off, you know, well, what are the users asking for and you know, what's the most demanded feature? There's some of that, certainly, but for the most part, it's people, individuals in the community that identify goals that they want to see happen, and then the people who work the hardest are the ones who get to see their changes made.
And yeah, and it's basically sort of people scratching their own itch. It's like, what's bothering you? What would you like to fix? And then you head up that project to fix that. And there are any number of different ways to do that. But I think a good example is Angie's signatures patch, right?
Oh, man, that was my itch for like 2 years.
Yeah. Angie really wasn't happy with the way that signatures worked in Drupal. For just comments or for nodes or both?
Everything about them just sucked.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was like you couldn't separate the signature from the comment body. When you would change your signature in user profile, it wouldn't update the rest of your posts. It was impossible to theme them differently. Just this, yeah, I could go on a, we could have a podcast about how much signatures used to suck if you want.
And that got in for Drupal 6, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's funny to watch that patch because that's basically WebChick's progression through the Drupal learning curve. Like the first version of that patch was like one line and then gradually got more and more just convoluted and complex. And then it was like, okay, let's scale it back a little. And anyway, it was kind of funny because that's essentially my longest running itch in the Drupal community. So it's funny to look back on posts I made in 2005 and be like, oh, I was so naive back then. But, you know.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw in, I mean, I think one of the things about the battle plans versus wish lists, because sometimes it comes off as, well, you know, if you don't have a roadmap, how do you know where it's going and how do you know that you're going to get a product that, you know, is what people want and addresses needs. And I think, I think that the whole kind of scratching your own itch thing is important for people kind of interesting in contributing, because it really means that you can actually get tangibly involved and have an influence, right, rather than, you know, kind of being subject to, you know, to a few people's kind of, you know, overlying idea of what should happen. You know, anybody can hop in and if you, you know, are willing to kind of put resources, whether it's code or anything else, any kind of effort behind, you know, a certain initiative, that can actually, you know, that is how things will change. So,
yeah, it means, I mean, the downside of it potentially is that it means some of the hard stuff sometimes doesn't get taken care of because it's hard. And, yeah. You know, but there are new models that are building up around that. I know Gabor recently posted on his blog that he's been tasked with making it at least better to use a WYSIWYG type editor in Drupal 7, because this is something that that survey that Dries Bertart, the project lead for Drupal, did that survey, and that was a thing that people definitely wanted. And now Acquia, the company that Dries has started up, is starting to, you know, try and improve Drupal as part of their business plan, and so Gabor has been tasked with this, what I think historically was just sort of like a difficult thing. You know, potentially if we were going to do our own WYSIWYG, then we'd really need someone who was like a super skilled JavaScript kind of person, and we tend to have more sort of back end people than front end developers like that. So
Except Nate, because he rocks, but you know.
I say tend to.
Yes, yes. But one thing that's really important to get across, though, because a lot of people hear this and they're like, get frustrated because they're like, well, I'm not a developer, so basically I'm held hostage by whatever these other people are deciding to do. But that's not actually true at all. And another big key Drupal philosophy that I've seen that's kind of unique to Drupal is that really all contributions are equally valued. You know, we maybe not equally, but very much valued. Like we someone who writes a really excellent piece of documentation is and oftentimes much more valuable than someone who fixes, not someone, but the contribution itself can impact far more people than someone who fixes a really like silly bug that's been kind of, you know, annoying people for a long time. And I find that the Drupal community is very welcoming towards, like, if you identify yourself as one of that, like, 2% of people that are actually going to contribute back, in whatever way that means, people will bend over backwards to help you.
Amen.
And it's true. And likewise, I think that there's a lot that can be done in the contrib repository. When we talk about Drupal core, we're talking about what you download when you click on download Drupal. But then there's all these add-on things. And things that are add-ons, like, for example, CCK and views, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast, can become very important things in their own right. But yet they're not part of core. And the reason that that's happening is so that they can develop at a different pace, that they don't need to necessarily worry about maybe some of the sort of baggage that comes with core. I mean, like, they can develop in a more sort of agile environment, I guess. And so that is another way lots of times that a lot of these things, I wrote the block cache module. I think I wrote it for 4.7, I think. And now a lot of the sort of concepts behind that module, and some of the code, I haven't actually looked at what made it into core, has made it into core for Drupal 6. And so that happens a lot, that lots of times there'll be something that starts out as a contrib module that people say, oh, that ought to be part of core, and it will become included in core in one way or another. And so it's also possible to, without necessarily attacking the problem directly as part of core, to sort of experiment. Because personally, as a developer, I oftentimes just don't feel quite, or at least at the time, I'm starting to feel more confident, but confident about working on core, because it felt so, you know, important. I didn't want to, I don't know, break things have to argue for big changes or something like that. But working in contrib, you can still do a lot. I mean, it's one of the great things about the Drupal framework is that these outside modules can influence what's happening in core.
Yeah, I also used to struggle with that whole, oh my God, those core developers are so smart and I could never possibly, you know, be with them because, you know, they're this sort of elite class or whatever, but the actual fact of it is that that's not really the case at all. And, you know, although core definitely goes through more quality testing than most parts of contrib, where you'll probably get, you know, at least 5 or 6 sets of eyes on any given piece of code, you know, a lot of patches start out really, really bad. You know, like they've got security holes or they've got, you know, they break your whole database or something like that. But the process of refining that with a group of people and each person kind of taking what they know to the table, like, for example, you know, someone might post this really great patch that, you know, does whatever. And then, you know, I might chime in and say, well, from a usability standpoint, you might want to do it this way instead. And Keith Smith might chime in and say, oh, the grammar in your help text is all wrong. It should be this instead. And it just over the course of that, we refine it. And then eventually it gets quote unquote core worthy and it gets included. And it's just really awesome to be part of that.
And it can be a great learning experience.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The learning process in that is amazing.
Yeah, I look at PHP code I wrote before I started working with Drupal, and it's just like, yeah. You know, just you get to learn from your other fellow developers, and not even just code either. Like, you know, working with, you know, some of the documentation team folks, I've learned a lot about how to write for the web and how to sell things if you're trying to market stuff. And, you know, it just really broadens your horizons and, you know, helps you improve your own life.
Improve your life through Drupal development.
That's right.
Act now. Ask me how. So let's talk about why. Why should, I mean, we're talking about, other than improving people's lives and, getting work, doing Drupal development and things looking good on your resume, or maybe including those things. Why should people, and companies consider contributing?
Well, I mean, one thing with giving back to the community is, especially if you're working on stuff on your own anyway, if you've got the stuff done, code or even if it's documentation, honestly, I mean, if you hold on to that yourself, I'm not going to share that with everybody else, let them use it. I mean, the thing is, then you're completely responsible for it yourself. And when you give it back to the community, you have thousands of people who are now helping you carry that forward, whether it's code or documentation or improvement and stuff like that. They'll improve and upgrade it and keep an eye out for it. And so it's not your job. You know, if you write, you know, 10 custom modules for a site and then it comes time to upgrade, well, then you have to upgrade all of your modules. Whereas if you had a community of other people who were using it and depending on it, chances are they're going to do a lot of that upgrading for you. And that just frees you up with a lot of time. And, you know, anything in the business world, time equals money. So that's just one sort of advantage that I think a lot of people don't think of. It's outside of their box of thinking, but it's a pretty big benefit to contributing.
It's the same thing that Angie was just saying about submitting a patch and having it go through this process. It actually really benefits to have it out in the open like that and have people looking at it and essentially criticizing. And in the same way, contributing your entire module that you might have built for your own site, you gain those same benefits.
Yeah, it's not just in fixes and reviews as well. I mean, the other thing about putting it out there to the community is, you know, other people will start working on it and adding, you know, new features or trying to use your, you know, your module or your code or whatever, in ways that kind of are outside of how you thought of it initially. And you can get some really interesting kind of new developments and, you know, I mean, I've personally witnessed a couple times where, you know, I'll contribute a module and then, you know, 6 months down the road, someone has suggested, oh, it'd be neat if this module had this feature, here's a patch for it. And then it turns out that's also a feature that, you know, a client or a site, you know, that was using the module would also love to have. And I didn't have to write it. I didn't have to do anything about it. It just kind of just happened.
Yeah, totally. And it makes you look sexy.
Yeah. Well, and it certainly
it kind of does. I mean, you know, Drupal as a meritocracy, right? I mean, you know, it's kind of good for, I mean, call it karma, call it your resume, call it what you will. I mean, you know, you kind of gain juice in the community by kind of getting your name out there, right?
Yeah, and it's beneficial in a number of ways. I mean, in terms of attracting business, if you're looking to be hired, you know, it's like you put your name out there, you're obviously have a touch on the pulse of what's going on with Drupal, and you obviously know something. So that sort of immediately brings you into the radar. And also, I mean, aside from just like business, visibility, I guess. You know, you also basically, because it is a meritocracy, it's open source, it also just gives you sort of more of a voice in the community. Honestly, I mean, if you want your opinion to be heard and the ideas that you're sort of working through, your voice is going to be heard louder if you're a known contributor in the community rather than just somebody who just happened to stumble in who, you know, people don't know, do you have any track record? Do you understand the underlying philosophies of Drupal? Do you understand how the community works by having gone through the contributing process? And those are really important things that are taken into consideration. And if you're depending on Drupal and you're using Drupal, it it behooves you to have some say in what's going on with it. I mean, that only makes sense.
The other thing that I've heard a lot of businesses say is they can't find Drupal people fast enough and this sort of thing. I mean, what Drupal developer or contributor in general doesn't want to work for a company who gives stuff back to the community? I mean, because that's the ultimate thing, right? You want your work that you do to be used by tons and tons of people because it's, you know, it's good for your feeling of, you know, self-worth. It's good for the world, quote unquote. You know what I mean? And, you know, if you have a choice between, you know, signing up with a company who does a lot of work and gives it back to the Drupal community and helps everybody, or going with a company that makes you sign a bunch of NDAs and locks everything up in perpetuity, and the minute you leave that company, all your code is gone. I mean, it's a no-brainer choice.
Well, and it decouples the code from the company, from the success or failure of the company. I mean, for instance, you might have someone that works for your company that builds this great module that they're really proud of. You as a company, and this person contribute this code back, out there to the community. Then this person leaves your company. There's a good chance that they might still maintain this module that your company is using, even though they're not working for your company anymore. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
The flip side of that too is that, you know, there will be other people that, you know, will also have expertise outside of your company and make good candidates for hire.
Or you might be able to hire other people that are obviously working on this module as well, and they'll already be familiar with your code before you've even hired them.
I was just going to say that, you know, also, I mean, just from the perspective of like prospective employees, like if someone's involved in the community and those are the people you want because they know what's going on with Drupal and you get sort of that knowledge. If this is their hobby and this is what they enjoy doing and they're really sort of up to their elbows in it, a company that, you know, their day job will align them with their hobby that they already enjoy and spend their free time on is, you know, doubly beneficial to both the employee and the employer. And it makes an employee, you know, a potential employee a lot more likely to go with a company where they'll be like, well, dang, you know, I find this fun anyway. And now here's a company who's totally gets that and will allow me to continue to have fun during my day job. And that is extremely appealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for instance, at Lullabot, we're told explicitly to stop working as opposed to work extra.
I think also this idea of coding out in the open makes people better coders. I think that, and the code is written better as well. It's one thing to just sort of get it working for your site that you're working on, but it's another thing to, and again, as a company, to know that it's going out there. The code will be better documented because the coder knows that there are other people that are going to be looking at their code. It'll be better documented because they'll, you know, put in comments so that other people understand what they're doing. Anytime you do anything, anytime you leave your house, you know, you check your hair in the mirror and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, it's different than sitting around in your underwear at home. And I think that a lot of code that doesn't get contributed, it looks a lot like people sitting around in their underwear at home. It's not often a pretty sight.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying, man?
I'm saying you guys need to get out more. That's what I'm saying.
You know, also, I mean, instead of, just better coding, I mean, contributing discussion and even what we've been sort of talking about here is about code, but there are lots of other things involved other than code. And when I first started with Drupal, I really didn't know how to code. And I learned a lot of it, part of it from banging my head against a wall and trying to actually accomplish a goal, but a lot of it was just from contributing and in sort of oblique ways that people might not really think of, you know, is that how do you become a better coder if you don't know how to code? But there are other ways that you can help the project that expose you to code and to best practices and in a learning environment. And so things like helping out in the issue queue, like I couldn't write the patch necessarily. I might not even understand how that code works, but by testing the patch, or even just reviewing the patch, like I would read the issue, see what the problem was, and then I would look at the code, and sometimes it would be way, way, way over my head. But But a lot of times, like, I could pick out pieces, see sort of, oh, I see what they're doing, like, that sort of makes sense. And even just following, and then following the issue and reading in the queue and, oh, you know, there was a security issue with this, you really need to do that. And, like, all these little data points just sort of sink into my mind over time. And then when I came to getting more into coding myself, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I know there's discussion about the security stuff. Maybe I should, you know, look that up. And, oh, yeah, that looks familiar. And another thing is also like helping with the documentation. I would go through and help cleaning up the handbook, and there'd be like code snippets and stuff, and I don't know anything about it. But I would review them and see if they worked, and then fix the documentation so that it matched what, you know, my experience was, and those kinds of things. And so all of those little things actually just taught me how to code and taught me a lot of best practices that, you know, you don't have to be a coder to learn coding, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
And that, yeah, there's a lot of non-code stuff, even in a lot of these code-based issue queues, you know, issues. So maybe, you know, it's all this code to rework the way that, I don't know, the user interface is working. But there also needs to be someone there to carry the discussion of whether it's a good idea to change the way that the user interface is working, or back it up with facts, or do some research about best practices with this kind of thing. You know, even to just say, this is great and it's totally heading in the right direction, here's why, is helpful for moving those things along. Because there's oftentimes a lot of people that are just like, yeah, the code, it looks like it works, but... And a lot of stuff just gets sort of lost to that, because it's like, it looks like it works, but what's compelling? Why should we actually include this code?
Yeah, I think that's one place where people new to Drupal are crucial. I know it's, I mean, it's definitely something I find myself running into, is I'm not always, you know, the best judge. Frequently, I'm not the best judge of, you know, how to best document or how, you know, how things should work ideally to, you know, to be as easy as possible. Cause kind of the, you know, the more used to things you get, the harder it is to kind of step back and remember, oh, well, but why is it like that? And how could it be different? I think that's another barrier, is a lot of people feel like, you know, oh, I'm new to Drupal, I don't really have a lot to give back, and I can't really, you know, I don't know enough yet to really get involved. And, you know, it's something you kind of hear people say frequently, is like, oh, I'm still kind of just getting acquainted. And actually, you know, people at that stage are often the most valuable, because they kind of have the freshest ideas and the freshest perspective on how things could potentially work.
Certainly, yeah, yeah. I mean, I always tell people at that stage, it's like, keep a notebook next to your computer and write down all the stuff that bothers you, because those of us who have been in it for so long understand all of the quirks and don't even start to notice them after a while. And yeah, that's difficult. So, yeah. So what are ways? So, what are some specific ways that people can jump in and contribute? I'm going to start off by saying this is a great time, because there are a whole lot of modules. What, like, we have like 3,000 modules that were written for Drupal 5 that, as we mentioned earlier, do not work with Drupal 6 now. And a lot of people are waiting until the modules that they are using on their site are upgraded to Drupal 6 before they'll even consider moving to Drupal 6. So go out there and find some modules and adopt them and help them move to Drupal 6 if they're not doing it themselves. I know personally I maintain way more modules than I ought to, and they all need to be upgraded to Drupal 6. And I had an email from someone, I think just this morning, offering, they said, I'm not really a coder, and you know, but I'm still learning, and I would love to help you upgrade to Drupal 6. I mean, and it was like, great, awesome, that's great. Like, you know, I would happily look through somebody else's buggy code, and help to fix it. At least I wouldn't feel like I was doing this on, you know, in a vacuum by myself, upgrading all these modules.
Yeah.
Also, upgrading does not have to, you don't have to be an expert coder. You can also just help review, you know, for modules that are have patches to help get them upgraded, they need people to test it and make sure it works and report bugs so they can get them all ironed out. It's really important. I mean, as a module maintainer, when I'm working on stuff and like when I was upgrading my modules, you know, and I'd make patches and they would just sit there, you know, and then somebody would come along and start testing it and giving me feedback. And I was just like, oh man, it made me so happy. You know, I was perfectly happy to code it if people would just tell me if it worked and, you know, or that there was a problem with it. And I know how to fix that. It takes me 5 minutes to fix it, you know, but I can't test every single aspect of, you know, my modules in every every different system and yada yada. And so getting that feedback is really useful. So even if you don't know how to code, you can really help the process along by just jumping into the queue and helping out, you know, figure out what the issues are and testing and giving feedback.
Yeah. If you want to help with module porting, there's a really great tool that can help you out, called Coder Module. And Coder Module is short for code review. And what it will do is it will scan.
I thought it was just short for, you know, coder, like person who codes.
No, he's trying to be funny. So, what it is, coder.
Don't you refer to people as coders? I don't know. Go ahead.
I just report the news, man. I don't make it up. but it has some various scanning. Basically, what it does is it scans through your code and it automatically reports things like, for example, it'll check for certain common security problems or coding standards violations. But another great thing it can do is it can scan any 5.x, like Drupal 5 compatible code, and come up with a list of things that you need to change in order to make it 6 compatible. And it's not a totally exhaustive thing. I mean, there's still some manual stuff that you have to do, but it's great for pointing you in 90% of the good directions that you need to. And I mean, if you give a maintainer something that's almost working, but except for a couple parts, a lot of times they can just go ahead and take it from there.
And I mean, the thing with Drupal all along is that we said earlier that the code base modules and the APIs change and break from version to version. However, the upgrading documentation is actually what I find to be some of the best documentation in Drupal is the handbook pages on upgrading modules and themes from one version to another. It's really, really good and useful stuff. I think that process of upgrading modules from Drupal 5 to Drupal 6 is a great place for people to jump in. And also at that same point, I think also between versions is a lot of times when people like myself start reevaluating the modules that we maintain and whether we want to upgrade them, whether we want to hand them over to someone else to maintain or something, you know, something like that. And so, and basically speaking for myself and all of the modules maintained by myself, JJeff on Drupal.com. Basically all of my modules need co-maintainers, if not primary maintainers. And so if there are modules out there that you use, or you just want to get involved with some of my modules, contact me or whoever is maintaining. I mean, there are a lot of people that really, hold their modules with tender, loving care, and they don't want anyone else to co-maintain. They don't want anyone else to get in there and muck things up. But I find that I'm usually so busy with other things, with all of the wonderful things that we're doing at Lullabot, that oftentimes my modules just sort of sit there and don't get the attention that they need. So even just, you know, helping out in the issue queue, responding to people, all of that kind of stuff is really, really helpful. To just know that there's people kind of keeping an eye on the modules.
Yeah, that actually segues into another really great way to contribute that really absolutely anyone can do, and that's helping just clean up issue queues. Like every single module or theme or Drupal itself on Drupal.org has an issue queue associated with it, which is basically where we post a log of all the problems or feature requests and stuff like that. And just going through and you know, if someone has a bug report and testing it out and saying, yep, I was able to reproduce this too, here's my system, you know, what I'm using, and these are the steps that I did, or marking one as a duplicate to say, nope, actually we already reported this over here, and this is the same, you know, that kind of stuff will win you a maintainer's love for life, because any work that's done by other people to clean that stuff out means that's more time that developers can spend just coding their modules. And it's also great to get you familiar with what the various issues are associated with a module before you use it. So it's a great, like, module evaluation tool as well.
Yeah, I'll just add, you know, I mean, that kind of issue cleaning and, you know, I mean, and simple things too, like, you know, just, you know, reporting when duplicate issues are filed and things like that, and just keeping that issue queue, small and relevant, is actually often a bigger help to a module maintainer than actually like co-maintaining, right? You know, It's real easy to commit changes. It's usually harder to, you know, assess if a certain fix is working or if it's the right fix or things like that. So just want to second that.
Developers are people too, even though they're geekier people than most. But you know, and when we look at this big inbox and it's just full of stuff, and we're just like, I don't even want to look at that today, you know. But if we see somebody's gone through and they've marked things fixed and duplicate as appropriate, it's like, oh my god, someone's paying attention to my module. I'm gonna just code like crazy, you know. And it really can make a huge psychological difference on a developer too, if they see that somebody else, if they feel like somebody else is invested in their work and contributing what they can.
Yeah, and also, I mean, honestly, getting back to the personal reasons for doing those kinds of things. If you're sort of using and depending on a particular contributed module, helping out in the queue is a really good plan of attack for keeping your bread and butter, you know, nice and shiny. Because, although I don't want shiny bread and butter.
Shiny bread and butter.
Shiny bread and butter.
That was quite the mixed metaphor, wasn't it?
I like it.
It was tasty and shiny.
Shined as it going down. But you know, I mean, the thing is that there are two serious benefits there. One is that you know sort of what's going on with the module, and in terms of like upgrades and stuff, you're sort of up with the latest discussions and code and issues that are happening with the module, which is something that's probably a good thing to know. But also, I mean, I know from my perspective as a module maintainer, when somebody starts helping me in the queue, when it comes time for me to turn around to feature requests, there are certain ones that float to the top of that list. And of course, the ones are at the top would be ones that I need personally or for a client or something like that. But then right underneath that comes the people who help me out. You know, so even if they can't code and they don't know a patch for how to do it, if they've been helping me out and working with me, then I am much more likely to give my time to their features, even if I don't personally care about them. And so that's just, you know, it's one of those sort of, you know, long-term goals of keeping involved so that you have a say on what's going to go on for things that impact you personally.
Sure. Yeah. So what are other ways? What else do we have on our list here?
One way I just want to mention real quick that a lot of people, this was what helped me rocket up the Drupal learning curve is helping out with user support. So things like answering support requests in the forums or IRC or on the mailing lists. Because my background is I was a Drupal Summer of Code student, or a Google Summer of Code student for Drupal, I should say, which meant that I had to, in 2 months, go from knowing nothing about Drupal, not even installing it before, to, hey, I can contribute code and in the form of the quiz module, and there was really no other way to do that than to just jump in and get involved. So what I did was I hung out in Pound Drupal support on IRC and Pound Drupal as well, and kind of answered a couple support questions a day, because I found that really exposed me to a wide breadth of problems that people were having, and it helped expose me to different aspects of the admin interface and stuff. So it was sort of a patchwork way to learn, but I found within about a week or two, I was pretty much up to speed on everything that Drupal could do. The other thing it did was it really helped deepen my knowledge, because when you were trying to explain something to somebody and how to do it, it really helps you sort of solidify that in your own mind. And if you're looking for Drupal work, There's no easier way than to appear as an expert on the forums, and you'll find your inbox is overflowing with people wanting to give you money to solve their problems. So,
So, yeah, some of the other things about just helping out with user support in terms of learning faster is that I find that I learn faster when there's an actual use case versus just, oh, here's information, that's good, stick it in the back of my mind. But when other people have problems and there's an actual real use case to solve, it sticks in my mind a lot better how that thing got resolved. So that just, and actually that works the same way, with documentation. When helping out with documentation, which is a great way to get involved, especially if you're new to Drupal, because I would just, you know, pick a section and look through for, you know, editing and rolling in comments. So, you know, handbook pages will sometimes have comments at the bottom, and it gets sort of confusing to have to read through the comments to figure out what's really pertinent down there that changes something that's in the page. And so reviewing the comments and figuring out how the main handbook page should be edited to reflect that, and then we can delete the comments to clean it up. Those kinds of things were really, really useful for me to just sort of encounter new information. I would find myself in sections of the handbook that I didn't even know existed, and I'd be like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I didn't know you could do that. And even if I didn't necessarily remember exactly how to do that or what that was, you know, then 2 months later, when either the question came up, you know, for me in a project I was working on or someone else asked the question, you'd be like, wait, I know that there's a handbook page on that somewhere because I've seen it. You know, and also I just got a lot more familiar with the actual structure of the handbook and where things are located, and I got a lot more comfortable with it and with searching and Drupal and being able to find things a lot more quickly. So, like, helping out with user support and documentation made it much easier and faster for me to find the solutions I needed to when I needed them later.
Yeah, that's critical for doing any kind of Drupal work, to be able to find the information that you need as quickly as possible. And I also want to touch on something that Addie said that might sound counterintuitive to people when she said that you should help with documentation, especially when you're new. But it's so true. Even though you might think to yourself, God, I don't even know anything about Drupal. What business do I have helping write documentation for it when I don't know what I'm doing? The problem with the existing documentation is it was written, for the most part, by people who already know what they're doing. And so they don't know the things that, you know, they can't remember anymore the things that confused them when they were new. They can't spot big gaping holes in the documentation that aren't covered. So really, when you're brand new, if you have to figure something out, your first step should be read any existing documentation if it's there. And if it is, you know, go through and make notes about what you found confusing in the documentation and post an issue about it so we can fix it. And then the second thing is there's no documentation existing, which you'll find happening from time to time. A great way to learn is to write it yourself, because, I mean, you got to look up everything and research it anyway. And if you do that process while you're writing it up for the benefit of other people, not only do you learn it better yourself, you also get your name out there as a contributor, and your karma points go skyrocketing when you contribute documentation, because it's such an often overlooked area in open source projects.
Yeah, and you can just write something out like, well, this is as best I could figure it out. And the great thing about putting that documentation then out to the community is that then the community can come along and say, oh, well, this part here, actually I can expand on this, and they can help fill out more of the stuff. So it's not like you have to have this like great piece of you know, writing that you've crafted, you know, with beauty and care. It's like, you know, put it out there, get the information out there, and then people can come along and edit it and tidy it up and get it to you know, a better state. So don't feel like you have to have something perfect to contribute, which is true for code and documentation and anything else you do.
So another great way that people can help is advocacy. What that means is basically, if you think Drupal's awesome, go tell other people that Drupal's awesome, you know, see if there's a local, you know, Drupal user group, encourage other people to attend or start one yourself. You know, blog about how excited you are about the new release of Drupal, you know, just get the word out there, because the more people who know about it, the more potential there are for more contributors to come. And that's really the lifeblood of any open source project. Another way that you can help is by donating money. The Drupal Association always needs some cold hard cash to keep the servers up and running, and you can donate either one time, or you can become what's called either an individual organization member, which means that you're donating a small yearly fee just to kind of bring ongoing revenue to the project. And that money goes to things like, you know, keeping the servers up and running, buying additional infrastructure for more stability, putting on things like DrupalCons, you know, all this really important stuff for the community that the kind of ad hoc grassroots organization doesn't really cover very well, but the Drupal Association can help manage.
And you can also throw money at developers and have part of that deal that they contribute that code back. If you don't know how to code, but you need something, you know, changes to a module or a new module or something like that, you can pay someone else to do it and have them give it back to the community.
Yeah. When in our workshops, we talk about this a lot, but I have a saying, $500 goes a long way in the Drupal community. That if you, you know, offer someone $500 or less to upgrade their module, to consider, you know, look, add a feature that you're looking for or something like that. It's a rarity that that happens. And, it shows respect to the developer that their time is valuable. And, yet, you know, you don't need to necessarily even pay them the full market rate. You know, you can get a lot of code in the Drupal community for $500. So, back to the, to contributing money to the association, the place to do that is association.drupal.org. Is that right? That's the correct URL. And then there's a donate button there. And, I should mention that everyone on this podcast, other than myself, is actually on the board of the association. So that's another way that people can get involved.
James and I are not on the board.
On the association.
Yes,
you're in the club.
Association member.
You get to wear the robes and put on the hat, and
we get to chant,
dance around.
You get the little following of trumpeteers behind you.
but also that I'm getting involved with the association is another way that people can help if they want to commit to that level. That's another way.
There's a lot of things that the association would like help with, but you know, even there's not too many people who are members of the association. So a lot of times, it's great to have people who, like, for example, have Civi CRM knowledge and can help, you know, troubleshoot that kind of stuff, or someone who's keen on, you know, sort of liaising with local user groups and stuff like that. There's a lot of ways that people who aren't quote unquote members of the association can help the association to accomplish its goals. And then, you know, when election times come around, it's a lot easier to vouch for someone who has a history of contributing that way than it is kind of to go after an unknown name.
Yeah. Another way I want to mention that people can contribute is by providing translations of modules and stuff that's out there. That's a huge one. Of course, you know, we as English speakers and Americans in general tend to have a narrow worldview sometimes, but certainly for those of you out there that speak English and a second language, that process of translating the English text of modules and themes even is actually a really straightforward process. The translation process is pretty straightforward. You turn on the translation module and the locale module.
Locale.
And it starts to load in all of the phrases for your site, and then you go through and just translate them all from one language into the other. And then there's all documentation on how this whole system works. But it's relatively straightforward, and I think that basically any translator can contribute their translations to any module without needing to sort of go through the module maintainer and stuff.
Probably changing though.
That's probably changing. But you know,
get
I'm always,
while it's hot.
I'm always, I'm always shocked and excited, and I feel like very worldly and exotic when my modules get translated into languages that
it's actually pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah. Worldly, I feel like I could go to France and you know, like, hey, I'm Jeff, you know me from that module that got translated into French. Hey. Waving to everyone
and say,
down the street.
Oui. Yeah, yeah.
Bonjour.
Oh, man.
And of course, it's also helping with the core translations. There are teams for translating a lot of languages, but there's also, a language that is not, in process of being translated for Drupal. There's a lot of text strings in core Drupal, and so getting all of those translations done and complete is a lot of work, and so generally not just one person tends to do those, and so so you can always help out with the core translations as well.
There's all kinds of fun language. There's an Esperanto translation.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's some translations into languages that goodness.
Is there a Klingon translation yet?
I don't know. It's
possible. I want a Klingon translation of views.
Yeah, if you go to drupal.org/project/translations with a capital T, you can see all the translations.
Isn't the views UI already in Klingon?
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, that was a good esoteric joke. I like that.
Zing.
All right, so quickly highlighting a couple of these other ones. Usability feedback is another great way. A lot of people will make the mistake of joining the Drupal website, 5 minutes later posting a thing about how much Drupal's usability sucks. And that's not quite the right way to go about it. A better way is to, for example, if you find a page that could stand to be, improved, take a screenshot of it, put it in a Microsoft Paint or whatever you have available to you and draw little arrows here and there and then post it to the issue queue and say, when I found this page, I found it kind of confusing, and if it had been like this instead, it would have really helped. Because having that sort of image and a spec almost to shoot for makes it a lot easier for developers to address this kind of stuff, because, again, we use Drupal every day. We don't spot a lot of these things. And a great example of that I use whenever I give this talk in Addy 2 is the modules page in Drupal 4.7 had the checkboxes way over on the right-hand side. And somebody just came along and said, if it was right on the left side, right next to the name, it would be a lot easier to check them off. And it's just one of those, like, duh? Oh, yeah! But it really takes somebody with some fresh eyes to the project to spot that kind of stuff. Then there's the basic stuff working at the issue queues. You can report bugs. You can report feature requests. And the main key in any of those things is to be as detailed as possible. If you're reporting a bug, what happened? What were you expecting to have happen? What were the steps that you did to make it to make the problem that you see do that? Because the easier it is to reproduce, the easier it's going to be to fix. And with feature requests, you want to be specific. You want to try and do a little bit of research and make sure this is something that the community would find, valuable. You want to, take the time to explain why this feature, sort of would be a good addition, and that kind of thing. There's a little bit of an art to that, but if you kind of read some of the the existing features, you can see that the general approach people take to that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sort of segues well into just this idea of, not just talking about how things could be changed, rearranged on the page, but how they could be changed, like how you could add on to things, what we call feature requests in the issue queue, but how you could, wouldn't it be great if it did this thing too, or did it in this way? And again, like Angie's saying, as much as you can sort of provide a quick, easy way for people to get what you're talking about, particularly like visual, mock-ups of how the functionality might work, drawings, charts, and graphs, all that kind of stuff is always good for really, quickly getting it. Above and beyond just, looking through things and trying to find bugs, which we talk about a lot. Certainly there's that, but this idea of, technically it works, but it would be better if it worked this way, and not necessarily, not necessarily just rearranging it, but also sometimes that sort of blue sky thinking just to get those ideas out there.
Yeah, definitely. In Drupal, any kind of change to the code, either in Drupal itself or to modules or themes, is called a patch. We work off the concept of patch files, which is basically just a simple text file that says, add a line here, subtract this line, change it to this, and that sort of thing. So that's learning how patches work and all this kind of thing is really the key to sort of controlling or exercising some sort of control over the Drupal development process, because you can both test these existing, you know, these features that are sort of in the pipes waiting to come out. And in fact, reviewing those patches is probably the biggest need in the community right now. There's a little block you can enable in your user profile in Drupal.org that shows like totals for, you know, bugs and things like that. And the total for patches that need reviewing is also always way higher than the number of critical bugs or the number of, you know, existing issues that need work. It, you know, we've got code out there to solve these problems, but what we really need are people to jump in there and just, you know, check it out, see if it works, you know, comment back and say, you know, well, it works, but what if we did it this way? Or, you know, check over the code, make sure that it looks good and that kind of thing. And that's probably the single most bang for your buck in terms of karma points. If you make yourself known, particularly on the Drupal issue queue as a patch reviewer, people will.
She says this from experience, folks.
Oh yeah, man. I can say whatever I want and they just. But really, though, it's a huge way to earn respect in the community.
And it's a great way to learn. I mean, getting into reviewing patches and understanding how that process works was a huge learning experience for me. That was like, it wasn't that hard. Like, I was always afraid of the whole patch thing. Like, I don't get the patch thing. I don't get it at all. But then when I, like, actually sat down and tried to do it, Angie, bend over backwards to help me figure it out. But not just Angie, actually. There were a number of people in the community who really, really took the time to sit down and like talk me through, things that I needed to do to learn how to do it. And so it really wasn't as scary. And then once I figured it out, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Not that hard, really. You just need to know the steps you have to go through. And then, you know, then it's like all of a sudden it was like there's just this big sandbox to play in of ways that I could help and places I could get involved. And I didn't need to actually understand the code in order to help. And so I learned and I got visibility in community. And so I think that reviewing patches, along with documentation are like two of the best places for people who are new to just jump in. Because you will get a lot of help to get you there. And it's a great way to get really high visibility, high karma, and learning in Drupal very quickly.
Yeah, definitely.
So we should also acknowledge the actual process of generating code, writing stuff, writing, you know, your own modules, writing and that process. I mean, we talk about, oh, you know, you should contribute your stuff, but how do people do that? I mean, they need to get a CVS account, and there's a page that we should probably point people to that explains how to do that. This process, you know, writing the patches, writing the modules, and basically, you know, sort of dealing with the CVS version control system and
contributing. There's basically two ways to contribute code. One is to contribute your own modules and themes, and for that you do need a CVS account, which is at drupal.org/CVS-account. There's an application form that you can fill in there. Read the instructions because they're pretty picky about, you know, making sure that new code doesn't duplicate existing code and that you have something to show for your work, and it's not just, I want a CVS account because at some point down the line I'm planning on doing something about this. We like to see that you do have actual contributions behind you before we start forking out that kind of access, because it is sort of elevated access on the site. But anybody can contribute patches, which are just those, again, little diff files or whatever that say, you know, subtract that line, add that line here, to any module or Drupal core itself. And in fact, that's how Drupal development happens, because there's only like three people or something that can actually, you know, change the code in Drupal core, but there's a whole bunch of people, like, you know, hundreds, who will sit there and alter it on their own machines and then submit the changes back to the project.
I just wanted to point out real quick on that, applying for CVS access, if you're working, if you want to do new contributor stuff, the URL that Angie gave takes you to the actual application form, but drupal.org/node/59 is actually the page which is that has the information about applying, and, like, you know, sort of like the ground rules and sort of what they're looking for and what you should be thinking about when you apply. So we'll put that link on there too.
Yep. Cool. And then we have the last item, and we're running really long here, so we'll try and go through this quickly, is just sort of mentoring. If you already know Drupal or feel like you've got something that you can share with others, do. And there are a lot of different ways that you can do that. As simple as just going into the IRC chat rooms and being friendly and helping people. I still remember the people when I first got involved with Drupal. I went in there and I asked some really, really basic questions that I didn't understand. There was a lot I didn't understand. And there were a few people who were really especially friendly to me. And I still remember them for that. And they've gone on to do other things, and I still have a warm feeling in my heart when I think about them, regardless, you know, of what they do. And so there's that. Addie's been really involved in the Drupal Dojo, as has Angie, and Matt Westgate's done a Drupal Dojo lesson, and that's also a really good place for people who are looking to get involved in Drupal, both from a learning and from a teaching standpoint.
And that's at groups.drupal.org/Drupal-dojo.
Rewind and play that one back if you need to.
We'll post it to the channel.
Yeah, and then there's some things like the Google Summer of Code and getting involved with that. And then there was the Drupal House of Pancakes, which we did a podcast about. Drupal Highly Open Participation, D-Hop, which
it was G-Hop, yeah. It was
G-Hop, Drupal, yes. Google.
Yeah, it's Google's Highly Open Participation Contest. And then there's Drop, which is the Drupal Really Open Participation, which is just an internal thing that we've done to continue the G-Hop theme.
Because it was such a great, good vibe thing that we're starting to do that just on our own.
Very, yeah. And a lot of the students got really excited from the G-Hop project, got really excited about it and wanted to keep it going, which I think is really cool. And so we came up with this Drop idea, and they've been continuing forward with that, which is pretty awesome.
Drupal House of Pancakes. I don't know.
No, it's Drupal.
I know. It's Google. It's Google. Google House of Pancakes.
No, right. It's D-R-O-P for us.
All these words don't mean anything.
Acronyms,
Google,
man.
Drupal, Yahoo. You can't just make up words.
Scooby Gooby.
You can't just make up words.
Like, well, what? Lullabot's a real word. Look it up.
All right. Touche. Well, on that note, we're going to call it a podcast. Anybody have anything else to add?
It's a podcast.
Woot.
So, yeah. So, I think in summation, to bring this on, you know, it's good stuff. I think that people can... there are lots of ways. Obviously, there's a really long list of ways that people can get involved. And it really is that process of starting to move from you people to us people, which is a really good and empowering thing if you're involved in Drupal, to really look at it as something that you can be involved in, you can have control over, and not see it as this crazy thing that other people are doing. And that you can't, you don't know where it's going and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there is definitely that sort of a danger in any open source project that something might happen to it.
I think one of the big things is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of debate over whether Drupal is a, you know, content management system or a content management framework or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, Drupal is definitely a community of the people involved, the people that have gotten it this far and the people that will get it further in the future. And I think that's the important part of this podcast is, you know, to get people involved you know, interact with the people behind the project and become the people behind the project. So,
yeah, my biggest thing I really want to sort of emphasize is that anybody can get involved, because I was really scared off of getting involved because it had to be all these smart people doing really important things to make this huge, massive project like Drupal actually happen. And I was just a small, stupid person, you know, But
and then she met me and realized I'm not smart either.
What you realize is it's a whole lot of stupid people.
Sure it is. But yeah, you know, like seriously, it's just not. I mean, there's just everybody just doing the best thing they can, putting whatever they happen to contribute forward. And once I sort of, you know, peeked behind that imaginary curtain that I had sort of created in my mind, which I know is just a natural inclination for a lot of people. You know, there's so much that you can do. Everybody can contribute, and you can make actually like that, you know, something, oh yeah, you can contribute, you know, sort of like when you let the kid, like, you know, do something in the kitchen over in the corner while you're really cooking. You know, it's not like that. It's like, it's actually, everybody can make valuable contributions no matter, you know, what their background is or how old they are or any of those kinds of things. Like, you have something you can contribute. And our community is very excited about, showing people those opportunities and helping them do that. So just, you know, if you're listening and you're like, oh yeah, maybe once I know more, I'll do that. You know, seriously, the best time to jump in is now, with eyes wide open. And we're here waiting for you.
Yep. We look forward to seeing you on the interweb. And until next time, we're going to say goodbye from this interweb. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. We'll see you next time. Bye.